Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 245, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into American shared consciousness, and it's Thursday, July 14th, 2022. Said that a little like Aziz. What's going on July 14th, 2022?
Oh, you know, it's National Tape Measure Day.
Hell okay. Yeah, man.
Shout out the Noble Tape Measure. Also, I National Mac and Cheese Day.
Okay.
You big mac
things I'm pretty. I'm not big. I feel like mac and cheese is probably like appropriately rated, you know?
Right.
Like I don't need. I feel
like
they're
go to a mac and cheese restaurant and be like,
this yeah,
is the best
I don't
thing
need
ever.
That shit. Like yeah, it's a yeah. It's a solid side if your main course is not getting the job done, is not gonna like stick to your ribs. You can go mac and cheese and like it adds a little extra. But I do not need a mac and cheese restaurant.
Mac and cheese is just, it's. I feel like it's perfect. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never mad perfect. When it's there. I'm like, oh, there you are. Hey, I love you, mac and cheese. But I'm never like, where are they at? I think it's all contextual, right? Because, like, in certain family meals, like, it has to be there culturally in some places. Like, you got to have the mac and cheese there.
Yeah. I feel like it also gets fucked up more often than people probably. Like, it's like, oh, you can't fuck that one up. But you, like, can.
Oh, you can. Oh, you can.
And frequently do.
Yeah.
Not you in particular. But people in general.
So you
that
like
is
my
one
mac
of my.
And cheese?
My mom kills it on the mac and cheese, and I have her recipe, and it's one of the very few things that she made really well that I'm able to, you know, replicate every once in a while.
Okay.
So,
it's
been described as like heroin by somebody who has done heroin.
Wow.
So like it wasn't like a complete, they were like, this is so good, it's like heroin. And I was like, well, heroin, don't say how good heroin is around my children, but I appreciate the compliment.
Not like Andy Cohen. That New Year's show, it's like a warm blanket inside. Like, heroin.
It was Andy Cohen. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, a.k.a. Applejacks, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
It's Miles Gray. You know him as Hideo Noho, but maybe because he was in Spain, you call him Javier Bardem, Salvador Balin.
Gray, the Guernica, which I saw for the first time. Fantastic piece. And the mayor of Plaza Mayor. Okay. Shout out.
What was the Guernica one?
The Guernica.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good. I just want to make sure I had that right.
Just want to make you say that again out loud for the record.
Shout out to Spain, who I'm sure we've just gained a bunch of fans in
España. 100%. Oh, yeah. And they, very quickly, like, you cannot take a picture of the Guernica. And I'm like, damn. Part of me wish I had, like, those Ray-Bans so I could be like, yoink. Got it. But it's not like I'm going to look at my own photo of the Guernica.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so moved by this.
Useless. Although, I just went to a work of art that is the opposite. I feel like it is specifically designed for taking pictures of, and that is Yayoi Kusama's Infinity Mirror Room. Have you been there? Yeah.
I've only seen thousands of pictures of people in there, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went, it's like a closet with mirrors on all the walls. That is basically what you are inside of. But then you look at the pictures and you're like, whoa, that was cool.
Photographs way better.
Yeah, it photographs incredibly
well.
Shout
out to my namesake, your boy.
Shout out
Kusama.
To your namesake, your boy Kusama.
It's your boy Kusama.
Anyways, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined by a very talented writer who's written for small regional outlets like the New Yorker, wrote a book called Cover Story that is a very dope look at NBA culture and influence via classic NBA magazine covers, available wherever fine books are sold. And he's the host of the new NBA podcast, Running the Break, with CJ and Alex, with yesterday's guest, CJ Toledano. Yep. It's Alex Wong! What's up, Alex?
What's up, guys? How do they decide those national whatever days, by the way? Like, when did that start? Because there's one every day.
I know.
We document them here.
No, I love that.
Because there's always something. Honestly, I think you just submit it. Because there are ones that are so out of left field that have, like, no significance aside from the people who decided it was, like, a significant day to celebrate, like, you know, staplers or some shit. Although, man, I don't want to slag off staplers. I think they're massively important.
Why don't you watch your mouth when you're talking about staplers?
Yeah, but name the last time you used a stapler, though.
3 days ago.
Damn. All right, never mind. All right, never mind. Let's move on.
I got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. They think staplers are very cool.
All right, next. So happy National Stapler Day, whatever it happened.
But yeah, there's a day for everything. And like when you read the like description, sometimes it's like it'll even tell on itself. It's like so and so decided that this needed to be a holiday when their golden retriever did a backflip off the back of their RV.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, and sometimes you can just, when it's completely invisible, the origins, you're like, oh, okay, so what industry decided that this was National Bullet Casings Day or whatever? Right.
Yeah, it was National Fried Chicken Day last week, I believe, or a couple weeks ago, and I'm just always confused, like, are we...
the 6th.
Like, I feel under pressure to, like, celebrate that. Like, I eat fried chicken a lot, but am I supposed to go eat that when it's a holiday, when it's a national day?
I feel like if you already honor the dish, then it's like look, you're already in the game. You know, you don't need to do ceremonial like celebrations just for the optics if you're living that life already. That's what I
believe. Okay, no, I'm with that. It's so fascinating to me because I feel like this is something that has just popped up. Or maybe it's been around forever and I'm just noticing it because I feel like someone's celebrating a national holiday every day and it's really confusing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it is.
I feel like it used to be the territory of like the most annoying person in your office who is just like looking for something to talk to anyone.
Like National Water Cooler Day.
Hey, hey, gang. Right. Did you know what day it is? Like, oh, I don't know, Steve. But now because we are all that annoying person looking for shit to talk about on social media, it's definitely taken on a second life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, we're all just, it's, marketing has become like so powerful now that with the advent of social media that like our society is completely designed by the marketing industry. And they're just like, what if we gave every day a thing that allowed us to bring attention to stuff and people talked about it on their own? And our podcast was like, yes, please.
Yes, please. And don't forget, folks, July 23 is Gorgeous Grandma Day.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do with that information? This is just all I want to know.
Yeah, yeah. That's you know, just a shout out to Gorgeous Grandma in your life, I guess.
I got you.
All right. Alex, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we are talking about today. Coachella, Night 7, just another banger. As we got more details, we got a real spicy meeting where everybody was just shouting at each other. Trump, like, literally got somebody, like, got a White House aide to, like, sneak his boys in the back door.
Yeah.
And then, like, the people who actually work at the White House were like,
how the fuck did you get in here?
How did you get in here? Like, one of the aides was like, oh shit, I just saw Rudy Giuliani, and, like, called her boss. And then everybody, like, came running. It's like crazy. It was like having a child and their, like, unruly friends that you try not to have around were, like, sneaking in through the bedroom window. But anyways, in this case, it almost led to the cooing of the nation. A soft coup, a dumb coup, but a coup nonetheless. Somebody's FaceTiming me. I've never been FaceTimed by somebody who I don't have them in my phone. I didn't even know you were allowed to do that.
That's an attack.
That's an attack on me. We're going to talk about the hard seltzer boom. It has officially gone flat.
Oof.
Thank you.
There it is.
So we're going to talk about that plenty more. But first, Alex, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Yeah, so mine is, I was looking up one of the searches I did earlier this week. It just said Lyle Breaking Bad. I guess I was watching Better Call Saul, and I was looking up just this obscure character named Lyle, who runs, who's the assistant manager of the chicken shop. And this is just something that I like to do in terms of, like, when I watch TV shows or movies, especially when I just think of a show that I watched like 20 years ago. Like, I don't know if the two of you ever watched Lost. Yeah. When it was out, like, that was such one of my favorite shows. And, like, once in a while, or, like, something, like, more, you know, popular, maybe something like The Sopranos, you know, or The Wire, things like that. Once in a while, I'll just be laying in bed at 2 a.m. and think of a really random character. And the best part about it is there's these dedicated wiki pages to these shows, and I will just read their character history from, like, season 1 to season 6 and just give myself a refresher of the life of these fictional characters. And it's just, I guess this is just something I like to do, just dive into these fictional universes.
Wait, so what did you learn about Lyle, the assistant manager of Los Pollos?
Yeah, so I was really because, like, he popped up on this latest episode of Better Call Saul, which is like a prequel to Breaking Bad, and I completely forgot that he had... I completely forgot that he had this whole story arc, so I just wanted to check in on, you know, when he was hired, when he was fired, his highlights and lowlights and things like that. And I've completely already forgot what I read from, like, Monday. So that just goes to show you how much memory I retain.
I thought it was just fans being like, yo, they should bring back Lyle. Like, wasn't he like 13 or something? He was a child. How the fuck did they bring him back without him being like, hey, it's me, Lyle.
Hey, listen, it's TV, man. They make the magic happen. But
They've done something with de-aging. There was a breakthrough in de-aging. Have y'all watched Hacks?
Yes.
Yeah.
The, like, young footage of her, of Jean Grey, like...
Jean Grey?
Or Jean Smart.
Yeah. I was like, damn, wait, hold on.
She should play Jean Grey, though. She's amazing. Yeah.
The most powerful mutant in the universe.
The de-aging is... I mean, she might be a mutant because of how dang good they're able to just, like, de-age her. My wife was like, wait, so was she a famous stand-up and this is, like, real footage? Because she really... Like, they've nailed it, man.
What's that Scorsese Netflix movie?
One kind of looked like shit to me.
But the aging was terrible on that one.
Yeah. So, like,
it was distracting.
Was there a leap forward? And, by the way, they spent, like, $250 million on that to get that de-aging technology. And I was like, all right, can we just give up on de-aging? Because it's never going to work, apparently. Like, I guess Pesci looked... So somewhat, like, young in some of the things, but, like, De Niro looked like he
was, you know, should be working security on the Polar Express for he just like looked dead-eyed and weird.
I think
you don't think Gene Smart looks good in the, like, as the young?
No, I think it, I'm just saying it to me, I still clock it as being like edited by computers. So it's
for
not,
sure, but much
and not just like
looking.
Deductively where I'm like, well, this can't exist, so therefore it must be computers. But like, I think the benefit to those clips are they're already like aged media. So like making something from 80s VHS look clean is much easier than like shooting someone in like 4K and being like, make that shit look clean.
So great, I think point, Miles.
The challenge is a little bit different, just to put on my old production brain for a second. And but in that sense, like, because I don't know if you even saw Stranger Things this last season. They did a lot of young 11 stuff. And even then I was like, that looks a little computery, but it nonetheless, it looks better than, you know, what we've seen in the past for sure.
What we're accustomed to.
Yeah.
So wait, how'd they do Lyle? Like what? Because Lyle,
did he look
he's,
old?
He's the assistant manager. He's the assistant manager at Los Palos Hermanos.
No, but
right.
I mean, like, yeah. But showing him in Better Call Saul, like, did he look much like drastically different than the memories? From
no,
when he, was,
he
like,
looks.
On
he
season?
Looks the same. He okay. He actually looks the exact same. I feel like Better Call Saul is the type of show where they're not that crazy on the de-aging. Like they. Right. I think they feel like the fans understand. You right, know, right, this right. is a prequel, so like we don't need to kind of just like. You know, pay $250 million on Lyle and, right. and, you know, throw it in your face.
Yeah. Right. And also, like, they've had, like, the help of Bob Odenkirk just, like, suddenly getting in, like, incredible shape after, like,
that's right.
That's right. For his other roles. And, like,
and
nobody's,
also,
like,
Mike's character, the actor who plays Mike, he just looks like he's 70 at all times.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like you need to make a big difference there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's wild. I'm glad to see Lyle. I remember clocking him as like somebody who actually looks like they have nailed the casting of somebody who works at a fast food restaurant.
It's like they actually went into a chicken spot.
Yeah.
And they went into like, Popeyes and they just found the guy and they're like, yeah, we're just going to typecast you. Speaking of age, one more thing about this, though. I just found out recently that Ray Seahorn, the actress who plays Kim Wexler, she's 50 in real life. I swear I thought she was like a 32-year-old.
Yeah, she really reads 32 for sure. Like, yeah, I mean, like on some level, I'm very impressed. And like, I'm like, man, like that is just a perfect, you know, human specimen. But the Bob Odenkirk of it, like you hear him talk about like what his past 5 years have been like. And like, you know, he's got a staff that comes and works on his body with him like he's LeBron James and like you know, so when it's a full-time job that pays well, I feel like I get it, you know, that like, so that's what's possible. And it's interesting to like see what the limits of capitalism and that being, you know, human will and vanity can do. But
no, I think that's such a great point, because I've always told people, like, if I had the money, I'd get in real good shape. Like, I'd look ripped. Right. Like, I'd hire a personal trainer, have someone scream at me every day. Because I'm not the type that can just, like, self-motivate myself to, like, go to the gym. My exercising is biking, a lot of walking, a lot of cardio. But, like, I don't know, man. I hear people and, like, even have friends who have, like, personal trainers and stuff. And I'm like, man, I got to devote my money somewhere else.
I just go to the gym for the culture. I actually don't lift, but I just like gym culture and just the conversations with people.
Just people watching.
Yeah, just people watching, getting to know.
And he keeps asking me to sign up for gym memberships so I can give him the guest pass. Like, they already banned me from there because I don't lift or nothing.
You're my downline. I need you to.
Because you just walk around, hands on your hips, sucking your teeth. All right. Okay. Mm.
Which kind of squat are you trying to do there? Because it's not like not any type of squat I know. I'm here every day. I don't do squats.
What's your name, Rick? Oh, Michelle? Okay.
I do go by Rick when I'm at the gym, actually. So it's helpful. Alex, what's something you think is underrated?
Something that is underrated, I want to say, is not having an important job. So I guess I should explain this a little. So, you know, I work in sports.
Shout out to Lyle.
Yeah, I work in sports. You know, you guys have this successful, wonderful podcast.
Huge.
And like we're in this media space. You know, I'm not going to speak for you guys, but like nothing that I do is that important. Okay. like the worst thing that ever happened is like, oh, I'll have a wrong analysis about where Kevin Durant is supposed to go. Right. And I was at a bar last night with some friends, and one of my friends brought her partner over, and I met him a few times. He was a super chill dude. Like, you know, we get high, we grab drinks. He's like one of the chill dudes. And I'm like, I finally asked him, got to know him a little bit. I'm like, what do you do? He's like, I'm an ICU doctor. And I was like, ICU nurse. And I'm like, holy shit. I was like, damn, like just from like meeting you a couple times, I wouldn't have never thought that was your job. And he started telling me about all the different experiences. He's like, oh yeah. He's just casually mentioning, he's like, oh yeah. The other time a woman came in and you know, she pulled a pocket knife out of her purse and you know, she was going to stab me. Like it was just another day on the job. Like right. me saying, right. oh yeah, I woke up today, I recorded a pod with you guys. And yeah. I'm just going to move on. And I'm like, how do you separate these two things? And he's like, when I walk in that door in the ICU, I do my job. And then when I come out of there, I have to separate it. Like, I'm not going to carry that with me. And it just made me realize, like, listen, I'm not trying to put down all these, like, these are very important jobs, like, especially, you know, in the pandemic and things like that. But it just made me realize, like, how comfortable of a life I live and a lot of my colleagues and all of us live with the fact that, like, we do jobs that are really stupid. We do jobs that didn't exist, like 20 years ago. So, right. so I think that is really underrated in a way of that it's such a privilege to have a not important job. Because at no point in my life, in my 24 hours, 24/7, do I ever need to be like an ICU nurse and have to like split work and personal. Right. Like, this is just how I am all the time. I consume sports. I get paid to do things in the sports world, and that's it. And so I think it's very underrated if you have a job that doesn't matter, that pays you.
Yeah. There are some industries where the stakes are incredibly low and everybody treats it like the stakes are incredibly high and important. And yeah. that is actually, I'd say, the norm would be. Like, there's even a thing, there's a thing called Sayre's Law. I think Sayre was like an academic, and they wrote, in any dispute, the intensity of feeling is inversely proportional to the value of the issues at stake. That is why academic politics are so bitter. And that feels right to me and appropriate to a lot of places that I've been in my life, is that like the places that have low stakes, people are going to be very intense. And I do love podcasting because there's not a single person in podcasting other than, you know, maybe like one or two who is like, this is life or death out here. I think we're all pretty much aware of the
yeah, value. And I'm not saying, like, you know, like the stuff that I do or you guys do is not important, but like I kind of would classify all of us as kind of like in entertainment in a way, right? Like yeah. we do these shows to entertain listeners, and like I'm a huge podcast listener, and I can see the value in that. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, people who take themselves too seriously at their profession. Like, before I got into sports in my 20s, you know, I had a business degree. I worked at an accounting firm for like 7-8 years. So I was around those people all the time. Yeah, right. And we were just here auditing companies, you know. Meanwhile, like stuff like Enron is happening, and I'm like, oh, I guess none of us really do our jobs at the end of the day. We just right. show up to work and pretend. Yeah. We look at a couple of things, you know, check a couple of things. But then it's like a little nudge, nudge, wink, wink with the execs at the top, and we just keep it moving. And like that really, like that period of my life really just made me like devalue kind of how I looked at work. Because right. I feel like in my 20s, it was always like I attached my self-worth to work. And it was just like not a healthy thing to do. Like every time you hung out with like friends and stuff, it's like, what do you do? How much do you make? You're getting yeah. promoted and stuff. And it's like, all that stuff is so stupid. And like, it's like, I take my work very seriously, but it's like, I think it's really healthy to just have an understanding. If you're not doing something that's actually quote unquote important, like, don't take it that seriously.
Yeah. The most cutthroat people I've ever been around are like interns at ABC News and like interns yeah. at Miramax. Like, right. you know.
It's like, yeah, like
you have to make yourself indispensable or you're
right, right. And dead. They start speaking in languages that's like, have you joined a cult? Like, right. I don't get it. Is it like LinkedIn speech? Like, right. I'm so confused. Right. Like yeah. the way people talk about work sometimes is just like hilarious to me.
Yeah. yeah. And I think, yeah, it just shows how successful people have just like fully swallowed the like hustle pill to be like, that's all it is. That's how I define my existence.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, that's the actual yeah. worst thing you could do for your life.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Half the time,
I used to hashtag rise and grind as a joke on IG,
right.
Like just to like kind of mock. But then like people started celebrating it with me. Like people would be like, oh, hell yeah. They're like, we rise and grinding at the gym and all this stuff. And like, oh my God, I used to do live, laugh, love for a really long time too. I guess it's like a separate day. But then people started loving it. And I was like, oh no, the joke has been ruined now. Like,
never mind, this is not good.
Yeah, this is not good. But like the grind culture is like hilarious to me because like there's working hard and just working smart. Like I'm not breaking any news here. And it's like people just want to work hard and they don't want to work smart.
Yeah.
Like it's really confusing to me. And it's like working hard becomes people's like entire personalities. And
it's like these generational habits that you have to like shed because like, mm-hmm. like to your point of like our job didn't exist 20 years ago. Like half the time I have like anxiety thinking about like what my grandparents, like my like World War II Japanese grandparents or like my black grandparents would be like, that's not a job.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, you're right, because from all the stories I've heard from y'all, it's about running yourself ragged. And that's what you called work. And part of me is like, am I? So I think a lot of the times people are like, am I still honoring that level of physical destruction in the act of working? And yeah, it can be a bit of a head fuck.
Yeah. My parents still like, you know, I think maybe until recently didn't really still understand what I did because I came from a very traditional business job, which they understood, a 9 to 5, you're working in a company that they know. So what I did when I switched to sports, especially when I started making like, you know, decent money, is like I would make sure all the checks get sent to their place. So that they'd be like, you have mail, and I'm like, oh, open that for me. So then they would see that I was actually making. No, but like
for real.
For like a 5-year stretch, they literally did not believe when I told them I was making money, like covering sports.
Right. Right. Yeah,
like it was just something that they could not fathom because like immigrant parents, you know, they came from Hong Kong, like they just couldn't believe it. So like, it was a very difficult like process to like convince them that I was actually working.
Yeah, like it took a while for me to go from like making YouTube videos to like doing that as a job for companies. So I'm like, now I make videos for like this magazine. And it's like, but there was no money when you were doing it. I'm like, that's because I was doing dumb videos like. This is a job skill like that you can do. And they're like, okay, all right. I guess I'll believe it when I see the videos.
Yeah. It's just a good thing. My in-laws are very impressed with both Korean immigrants and they totally get the value of podcasts and have believed in the vision from day one. And just like so confused, but also like they were never like, you have to go to law school. They were just like, you should go to law school.
Yeah. So basically you have to go to law school.
Yeah. And I didn't. So here we are. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And finally, Alex, we do like to ask our guests, what is something you think is overrated?
People who always talk about quitting social media or reducing their screen time. So, you know, I think there was a whole economy of people just like writing stories about, you know, getting off the internet, quitting Twitter for like 30 days and all of this stuff. And, you know, I live here in Toronto. We actually had like across Canada, there was like a nationwide service outage.
Oh, right.
Last Friday. So like, actually, there was like no access to online for me for like half a day. You know, my friends and I. So there's two service providers here. I'll keep it quick. One of them was down. The other wasn't. So, you know, we were just all around the city. People were just gathered outside. Yeah, yeah. So Bell and Rogers. So then Starbucks was like with the other network. So there was like just 200 kids outside Starbucks stealing Wi-Fi. And it just made me realize that day, like I have a bike app that I use, I couldn't use. So I had to like take the streetcar instead. I was pulling up Uber Eats on my way home from work. And I was like, oh, I guess I can't order Uber Eats because I don't have it. And I was like, the reliance on this is just insane. Like I had meetings that were set up, you know, friends were trying to reach me. But it just made me realize it's actually the opposite. Like, we got to appreciate how much access we have to the online world more versus hating on it. Because I think you guys, the topics that you guys talk about, and obviously you guys are you know, familiar with the online world. It's like, I used to be envious of people who are like, I don't own a TV, or like, yeah, I'm not on Twitter at all. I don't do any of that stuff. Now I'm like, this is just part of our lives and we got to embrace it. And if you don't like what you see on your Twitter timeline, or your IG, TikTok, whatever it is, there's tools. You can mute people. You can create lists. You can mute words. I just think when people talk about they want to quit social media, you're just not using social media smart enough. Because I've never had an issue. Like I'm always online just because of, you know, the sports world and the job and the industry that I'm in. But I'm like, I've never had burnout. And like, I've seen all the shit. I've seen the world crumbling the last like 5 years. You know, checking in on the US politics and, you know, all the stuff that's happening around the world. But not a single day have I ever felt like, oh man, I need to get off social media. So no more anti quitting the internet and social media. Oh, I think, man, that's lucky. Very overrated.
You're lucky if you said you looked in the hell's eye and you're like,
no, but I did.
Didn't fuck me up. Oh man, because it fucks me up constantly. Yeah. And I think probably the nature, you know, like if because of like having to talk about news and like what's happening every day, like I don't, unfortunately, don't have the luxury to curate what I look at because need a holistic understanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I can't like sort of avoid certain things, but I do get your point. Like there's the good and bad of it. And those tools are there. Unfortunately, the way I engage with social media a lot of the time is to be like, you know, you have to open that door where all the noise is coming out from. And you're like, I got to see what's happening in there for my job. And you're like, and then you're like, okay, fuck. Okay. I take that.
No, that's fair. And I think it's just like personal approaches.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like I'm on Twitter a lot and like, I don't engage with people. Like I'm not there to have conversations. Like I have a decent sized following. like people want to talk about sports. Like, I'm just there to get some jokes off.
Right, right.
And
right.
It's like, you know, like I think it's just, but then I pull up and I'll pull up Twitter after like 6 hours and I see like two sports writers just engaged in like a 70 tweet thread over like some hypothetical scenario. And I'm like, I know you two have well-paid jobs. Like, there's no way you got to spend your time with this. So it's like, I don't think we need to be extreme about being online all the time or quitting social media entirely. I do feel like there's a middle ground that people can strike. I just get really annoyed when people are like so proud of themselves for like being on Twitter for 30 days. I'm
who like jumped offline for like a year after Trump got nominated. Was just like, I actually just like moved to the woods, and the New York Times was like, whoa,
exactly.
Can we actually study you in a lab?
Yeah, or the personal essay economy of people who like write about what their life was like, and it's like, oh. So you actually like read a book finally. Like, it's like, congratulations. Like, we can do both.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Man, I will say that like the idea, I didn't know that story about like half of Toronto losing internet access. I just got real jealous of that. Like, that sounds like exciting and like a fun event if like all of a sudden half the internet, like granted, I wouldn't be able to do my job and, you know, taking care of, you know, our family would be a lot harder, but I don't know. Sounds cool.
No, I was trying to think of like what was the most minor inconvenience for a person in this city. And I think I landed at like somebody probably like negotiating to sell a pair of sneakers on like Facebook for like months. And they finally set up a meetup on like the Friday morning.
and then
it just didn't happen. They could not contact each other and somebody just didn't have each other's info. And now that pair of sneakers is gone. I was just trying to think of what was the dumbest inconvenience people would have ran into that day.
All right. Let's hit some January 6th hearing information. Yeah. I mean, it's more of the same, more of Trump being basically like just a drunk person, a horse in the hospital, a drunk person in the White House, and everybody just being like, oh no, he's with his bad friends. We've got to stop this.
Yeah. Phil, Andy Dick got back in here. You know how bad of an influence
it's real
he is.
Andy Dick vibes.
Yeah. So yeah, on Tuesday the hearing was really focusing on like what coordination or what the communication or connections were between like the violent, you know, extremists we saw, and the like how they may have been in contact with the White House and just sort of the general path to like this quote unquote rally. So we heard from people like the former spokesperson of the Oath Keepers, like a regular MAGA guy who did some crimes because he was just listening to what Trump said. Former Twitter employee who was like, I was telling them for weeks that this seemed so bad what I was seeing on Twitter from a content standpoint, and it just seemed like we weren't going to do anything about it. And, you know, just sort of the broad strokes of it were just to sort of paint this image from the moment Trump realized that he had exhausted all of his options in terms of trying to like rat fuck an election win out and realizing, oh, I think I have to shift to like mob violence. So they point to this one day on December 18th when, again, this was when it was clear. There's real no, like the legal paths have dried up. And he had a cool party with the Four Horsemen of Horseshit. Had Sidney What's Crackin' Powell, Mike Flynn, disgraced general who was, you know, obviously lied to the FBI and was later pardoned, the former CEO of Overstock.com, and Rudy Giuliani. And they all basically took turns getting in Trump's ear about how they could prove that there was this election fraud and there was like there were actors outside of the U.S. and there maybe was corruption with Democrats and this, that, and the other. And nothing was really sticking. And during this meeting, a bunch of like the White House lawyers heard about it, crashed this party, and it just turned into like an all out screaming match because they're like, what are y'all doing here? What are you telling him? One guy was like telling one of the lawyers, he's like, you've done nothing, blah, blah, blah. Like you failed the president. And the lawyer's like, who do you think I am? He's like, you're Pat Cipollone. He's like, I'm not, you fucking idiot. Like, I'm this other guy. Shut the fuck up. And it got to the point where, like, even Mike Flynn, like, stood up, got in a guy's face. And then this lawyer was like, yo, you better sit down or it's going to be a problem. And then Mike Flynn sat down.
Wow.
So all of this.
Yeah. And the conversation, when you, like, listen to the, like, account of it, it's just very much like the guys, the White House lawyers are just like, I don't know, man. They were talking about like Chavez and like Venezuelan voting machines and shit. And we just kept being like, what evidence do you have? What evidence? And they just kept being like, you're not fighting hard enough for the president. They were like, evidence. I don't hear evidence.
Right.
You're a coward who stands. Yeah, but like,
see, Mr. President, you need fighters. You need fighters, Mr. President, as Mike Flynn kept telling him, because he's saying you need more flunkies who are just going to, you know, make up magical laws. There is an interesting moment where, like, as this argument was going back and forth at the Oval Office, this is an interesting moment. Quote, at some point, the meeting migrated to the yellow oval room in the White House residence, where Trump served the group Swedish meatballs.
Hell,
Byrne, who is the former CEO of Overstock.com, was, quote, nonstop housing meatballs. He ate so many meatballs, end quote. One person familiar with the gathering told the Washington Post. There, the fighting continued. We're fucked.
Man, what, like, an aside. This guy was nonstop housing meatballs.
What is this? I think you should leave sketch.
I know.
He's like, you're not going to tell anybody how I was housing the Swedish meatballs, are you?
And then M-dash, he ate so many meatballs. This is such a great... This is my favorite detail revelation thus far of the January 6th committee.
And you know that quote came from some guy who was in a frat.
Yeah,
this dude was nonstop housing meatballs. Like, I can't imagine that quote from coming from some like lawyer person. Anyway, this basically, after all that happened, it was clear to Trump, okay, the lawyers don't want to help. These people who are telling me there's like all these cool conspiracy theories, they don't seem to be panning out. And it turns like maybe we just need to get more people on to DC on the 6th to maybe physically intervene. And this is when he had the tweet talking about, you know, the Peter Navarro has this like report on like the fraud and how it's like mathematically impossible for me to have lost. And then he says, but don't worry, there's going to, quote, big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there. We'll be wild. He tweeted that like in the few hours after all this shit went down in the Oval Office. So they're showing this timeline of like they got together. They had this screaming match on how it could be solved.
Housed a bunch of meatballs.
Housed a bunch of meatballs and was like, you know what? I need to signal to the goons that January 6th is the day. You know how he says stand back and stand by? Well, now you have orders to be there January 6th. So as they go on with this, they also bring up the fact that one of the organizers of the rally was applying for permits with like the park services for like a quote static event. Like this was just going to be a rally in one place. There was just going to be speaking and that was it. It's over. No other like movements or anything like that would happen at this rally. But behind the scenes, clearly everybody in the administration knew that the plan was go there. And then, you know, at some point, Trump was just going to say, hey, we should march on the Capitol, y'all. And this was an interesting tweet that the organizer of the rally texted to the MyPillow guy, Mike Lindell. She texted, quote, this day is only between us. It can also not get out about the march because I will be in trouble with the National Park Service and all the agencies. But POTUS is going to just call for it, quote, unexpectedly. And they point to the fact that, like, as documentaries and things showed, a lot of like the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, they had moved towards the Capitol, like even before Trump spoke, like they knew where they had to be once the march happened. So they would be at the very front of like this confrontation with the Capitol Police and these other people who were at this rally. So, you know, the way the January 6th committee is sort of laying it out is saying, you know, they're willfully mischaracterizing what this event is going to be to A, maybe have less protection at the Capitol, because for all intents and purposes, the main thing was just going to happen at the Ellipse, and that was it. And that would allow for like lighter security on the Capitol. Meanwhile, these other like extremist groups could coordinate like where they wanted to be and how they were going to enter the Capitol.
And as we've learned in previous ones, he wanted to be leading the charge, like straight up, like Washington like crossing the Delaware style, just like be, you know, with his horses, just like, you know, going down there. So,
yeah, it's
pretty wild.
It's wild. I mean, like, you know, and it's kind of hard to square like who knew what when, because most people observing were like, this is going to be bad on January 6th.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of analysis that seemingly didn't lead to, like, you know, physical, tangible results in terms of, like, physical security at the Capitol. But, you know, all in all, just it continues to paint, like, just how much, you know, coordination was going on and how premeditated many of the things are, which I think anybody who saw what happened that day was like, this shit just didn't happen out of thin air.
Right.
But as a fun aside, I just want to point out John Bolton, Mr. War, the warmongering Muppet himself, he was on CNN arguing with Jake Tapper about, like,
we can call him Jacob. We're not happy with him. Jacob Tapper.
Jacob Tapper. Just about saying, like, you know, it's pretty wild. Like, basically going on about, was it a coup? Was it not a coup? How do you even define what a coup is? And then John Bolton sort of, like, actually's his way into being like, yeah, I did some coups. And so let me just play this for you.
Donald Trump looking out for Donald Trump. It's a once in a lifetime occurrence.
I don't know that I agree with you, to be fair, with all due respect. One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat,
yeah,
not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work. And that's not what he did. It was just stumbling around from one idea to another. Ultimately, he did unleash the rioters at the Capitol. As to that, there's no doubt. But not to overthrow the Constitution, to buy more time to throw the matter back to the states to try and redo the issue.
Okay.
As someone who's, you know, done a couple of coup d'etat, I like how he, like, speaks of it. Like, the way he referred to coups is, like, the way that, like, a foodie will refer to something, like, very in a different way that you're like, oh, damn, that's like, impressive. That's a different this person's level of an knowledge. Expert. Yeah. Oh, they know how to pronounce coup d'etat.
Yeah, take your pick.
Crudite, as I call it.
Take your pick of, there's a few people who are like, okay, so he said he planned a coup. Let's check out one of the ones, like, which one could it have possibly been? And it's like, well, it's too early for, like, Iran in the 50s. And then, like, it probably this sweet spot here in the 80s is where he may have a shout into saying, like, yeah, I was in the room talking to people about how to do that.
Not so much there or right there, but right around here. This region here. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is just, I just like that even in the commentary of it, there's just, like, more, like, gross American issues. Like, as somebody who's planned to overthrow governments before in the sake of the military-industrial complex, this wasn't a coup. And that's a disrespect to the real earth fuckers like me. It's like the way he took offense to it.
Right. Yeah. I would say there's a point he is making there is, like, well, no, like, that when the CIA wants to overthrow a government, they just, like, start killing people and, like, it's very much more precision operation. This guy's a dipshit without any sort of practical knowledge of, like, how to do this sort of thing. That's right. Definitely true, but it doesn't change the fact that he was, like, trying. Like, To disregard the fact that he wanted them to hang Mike Pence is pretty. I don't know. I'm not sure what basis he's using to be like. He just wanted to put it back to the states. It's like he said that Mike Pence maybe should be hung. Like as people were trying
I don't know
to
that.
Hang.
Well,
Mike
we just
Pence.
Played a clip of that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, everyone's doing their best to obscure what happened, especially when you're someone who worked in that administration. Like. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll speak about the death of Seltzer. Be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back, and the hard seltzer boom, officially flat, is what our writer JM, actually, he said officially dead. I added the flat, and I want credit for it. I nailed it.
Got it.
You all saw it. I'm going to mail myself that headline so nobody can steal it. Anyways, I did not realize this. I've been observing the hard seltzer boom from afar, but it really, 2019, 2020, 2021, hard seltzer sales were going up, up, up.
Yeah.
2022 comes around. People are back out there. This felt like maybe the summer that there were the most people out and, just behaving like they normally would. You might have expected it to keep going up, and instead it fell.
Oh, no.
Boston Beer had to throw out millions of cases of Truly hard seltzer in the fall.
I mean, to be honest, that shit tastes bad though. So, like, whether or not
does it all taste bad? I haven't drank since 2015, and I'm not like interested in it, but I am curious about like what this boom, like what has caused this boom, and because it's like malt, it's not like a vodka soda, which is what I think people are looking for from it. It's instead like a malt beverage.
Well, yeah, because that's how they get around like the liquor laws, right?
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I'll drink it on occasion, but I never got to the point where I'm like, yo, let's get fucking clobbered, fam. Like, I was not into the seltzer like that. I don't know, like, Alex, what was the vibe? What were the seltzer vibes up north?
You know what? I'm like the worst person to talk to about this because I just go out and hang out. I just drink whatever's in people's fridges or what they hand out to me. I'm a follower, not a leader in that situation. Yeah.
Have you ever had the urge? Have you ever, like, when you're like, oh, you know what? That's in the fridge. Let me try this. Do you ever go, that's a little bit of all right? Or you're like, nah, this shit is not.
No, you know what? I drink, when I open a fridge, it's the can design that gets to me. So for all the designers out there, I pick based on the design. Not the actual alcohol. Yeah.
This one's called horseshit flavor, but I just love the design. It's like very minimal. It's like a Goya painting or something. I think, like, honestly, it started off as like, it was super easy to drink. You know, it's just like you pick it up, It's got light flavor. People were like, it's healthy because it's clear was like, I think, sort of like the weird subconscious trick you did to yourself when you drank them. And then after a while, like, I felt like there were like three ones that were like cool flavors to drink. And then everybody fucking showed up. Like, even Topo Chico's like, literally hold my beer as I enter the fucking seltzer wars. Mm-hmm. And everybody had an offering. And I think it just got, flooded. And like, because everything kind of tastes the same, it's like, well, I don't know, man. Then it's all kind of the same to me. That was my experience with it.
Topo Chico is such a great example of like the growth over anything kind of like just the problem with capitalism is like they have a good product and they're like, okay, well, we need to show growth. So we're going to enter the flavored beverages market. We're going to enter the hard seltzer, just like trying to like grow in every direction. We're going to do a line of toys for kids. It's like, what? Wait, what the fuck are you talking about,
man? The Super Chicos, the Super Kids. But like, I mean, that all happened because Coca-Cola bought them like 5 years
right.
ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And that completely just changed the trajectory where they went from like this local thing that like I felt like annoying people in like Highland Park were like, dude, Topo, to now being the, you know, the in seltzer or
yeah.
carbonated water.
Yeah.
I don't know. It honestly just feels like it just lost its luster after a while. And people like the tried and true ways of being inebriated. And
yeah, about the Atlantic was like, hey, maybe this has just always been bad and no one noticed because we were all going slightly crazy during the pandemic. And I think there's something I think there are some things from the pandemic we're going to look back on and be like, huh? Yeah, no, yeah. That was bad. That wasn't a good thing that we were all going through there.
I think all it was it offered a new thing to put in a cooler at a party.
Yeah.
And then they tried to do that shit at restaurants and stuff. I would see it on menus and I'm like, what the fuck for? This, like, why would you go out to drink something like if you're at a bar to then drink a canned thing that tastes like nonsense?
But that is strange to have a product that is like popular and then when people try to give it to you in some context, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
Ew. No fucking way, yeah, right. Man. Like, that's, I guess it would be like a pizzeria, like having DiGiorno or something, like on the, it's like, why?
It's just hard. Yeah. No one wants that. No one wants to go out for and then pay for a low energy drink. Like, right. That doesn't, like, beer on tap, sure. Like, whatever beer, like, I think people are societally used to doing that. But I think because seltzer became like the fuel of like your mini like COVID turn up parties.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it's just a thing you want to move past. And you're like, I'd like a drink where a human being put the ingredients together in front of me. I don't know.
Anyways, the death throes will be embarrassing. They've just released something called Awesome Sauce Bun Length. And it is a seltzer made using hot dog water. So it'll be bad. They'll be trying all sorts of shit and it'll go badly.
I'm not gonna lie. I went to Trader Joe's and I bought a pack of dill pickle seltzer because I
all just, right, man.
It was so stupid looking. And then I asked them because now that I know like they kind of got to talk at the register, I'm like, yo, what's good with this? And they're like, honestly, we were just talking about how we needed to drink that later, like when our shift is over. And the other person came from the other register, like, oh, did you get the dill pickle seltzer? They're like, yo, have you had it before? I'm like, no.
Gross.
And they're like, yeah, we're trying to try. Maybe it could be bad. It honestly tastes like a cucumber. It's really uneventful. And I feel stupid that, again, I fell for the marketing.
Well, Alex, it has been truly a pleasure having you on TDZ. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Steven_LeBron, Steven LeBron on Instagram. If you want to make me explain that name, I could. I can do it in 30 seconds.
Please do.
I signed up for social media when I was still working at my accounting job. And, you know, my goal on social media at first was just to tweet during, like, you know, board meetings and stuff. And just like embarrass my company. And I obviously did not want HR to find that.
Right.
And on the day that I was signing up for social media, there was a very clickbait headline on USA Today. LeBron James was doing his first stint with the Cavaliers at the time. It said, Cleveland's LeBron suspended 50 games for steroids. And when you click on it, it is a minor league Cleveland Indians pitcher named Stephen LeBron. And I was like, this is perfect. Over the years, people think it's some kind of, you know, amalgamation of like Steph Curry and LeBron James or something like that. And I always try to tell them there's absolutely no meaning. I always still get a kick out of PR people emailing me, calling me Steve. I really do not blame them.
Hey, Steve-o.
Steve. I've gone to events where I'm on the list as Stephen LeBron. I'm just like, yeah, Steve here. But like, it's my own fault. I never changed that up. But, you know, I feel like it's good to not have your your real name online as, you know, in as many places as possible.
For sure.
So there we go. And make sure, you know, check out, like you guys mentioned up top, Running the Break. With CJ and myself, you know, it's an off the court NBA podcast. We talk a lot about stuff that's taking place away from the basketball floor. And if you don't like basketball, you know, just subscribe to it and just, I don't know, press play, whatever's good for the algorithm.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yeah, so one is actually, there was a video that was put out of a Team Canada basketball team. It was an under 23 team, so they're all like born, I guess, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's a video where they showed them things from the early 2000s. iPod, MSN Messenger, LimeWire, a photo of Britney Spears. And me being 37, it made me feel really old because they had no idea when they put up the graphic of the MSN Messenger, what it was. Wow. Someone was like, is this Napster? Or like, is this something that you guys use? And then there was another basketball player, when she was showing the photo of Britney Spears, she was so confident. She's like, yeah, I know, that's Shakira.
What?
So it's amazing to me to see like things that I followed in my childhood and teenage years become things that the next generation is completely not familiar with. So
right.
I guess I didn't really enjoy that video, but that's the one that I picked.
It's good for the millennial outrage within us.
Miles, where can people find you? What is a tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. You know about Mad Boosties. You know about 420 Day Fiance. Also, check out Lords of Soccer, the FIFA podcast that I helped produce. It moves along, and we actually had to do a little bit of an update because two people from, you know, involved with FIFA corruption got, you know, actually their cases dismissed by the Swiss courts. Oh, lucky for them. But yeah, the podcast is great. Please check it out for all fans of true crime and footy. Some tweets that I like. Let's see. First one, again, I love the construction of like, if I text you blank emoji, it means this. This one is from at Pope Awesome the 13th, or at Pope Awesome XIII. It says, if I text you, and it's the flag of Norway, if I text you the flag, it means nor fucking way.
Nor fucking way, mate.
Stupid. Nor fucking way. And then another one at Pleasant, PLEAS4NT, tweeted, you should be able to see people's health bars on Zoom.
Yeah.
Just fucking, oh my God. Just as a concept, I'm like, yo, let me see your health bars real quick. How much health energy you working with? You need to, what's your armor level at?
I need to catch one of those bouncing hearts or whatever the fuck they had in Zelda. I need to restore. I need a restoration to my health bars. All right. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Bubba at Ratio These Nuts tweeted, you just disrespected a former Subway sandwich artist.
Oh shit.
And then the volatile mermaid, oh no, she twinned, tweeted, practice self-care, take a walk, ride a bike, paint a picture using the blood of your enemies, befriend a wolf pack to do your evil bidding, cast a curse by the ancient willow in the enchanted forest, meditate, heal. Which I just thought that was a good take on a very common, thought I knew where it was headed, genre of tweet. I think there was some good advice buried in there, as opposed to the normal self-care, hippie, head up your own ass, woo-woo bullshit. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Okay, so TikTok continues to just open my eyes. It's just so funny how on TikTok there's so many tracks that are just sped up or slowed down versions of like past songs that were popular like 10 years ago. And you're like, oh, this shit hits so different, the slowed and reverb version. And I saw this one clip of like, it was just like shots of like Denis Villeneuve like cinematography, but it was set to that M83 song Solitude, but it's the song is slowed and reverb version. So you got to check out MA3 Solitude slowed reverb. And you can only get this on SoundCloud. But the song is like so much more dramatic in this way. And I was like, it's beautiful. So yeah, check this one out. MA3 Solitude slowed and reverb for that TikTok rain.
All right. Well, we will link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.